Good morning, good morning. Before you all leave, there's a certain lyric there, Lloyd. If there's a lyric, Lloyd, I'm talking to you. Listen, man, I'm talking to you. Now, what's this part of the song that says, you will not see until you let me be that I'm the Lord of all?
See, now you're making me remember too much.
Okay. But I like that because I just wanted to engage that because that's kind of something that I want us to begin to deal with. Thank you so much. I ain't going to have you sing it because I was going to jump over here and sing myself.
That ain't okay. Your gift.
He said that's not my gift, but he doesn't know that I'm multi-talented. I have all kinds of skills. In fact, I have a whole recording studio in my shower. Still trying to figure out how to get that into the basement, but anyway, it definitely sounds better in those acoustical walls called the shower. I am so excited to be in front of you on this morning. How y'all doing? All right. It's good to see people. You know, we are and have been what we call virtually and technically connected at our church. So I've been preaching in front of a camera to our church for the past few months. So it's always good to see people and wonderful people at that. And every time I get to come to the Crossing, it's a great time. My question to you really jumps into this idea of what we're going to be talking about. I need to get a little personal because I need to ask you a interrogating question because we're going to talk about a man who interrogated God. Have you ever been so mad, perplexed, even befuddled with life that you levied some heavy questions to God? Like, God, are you real? Like, is this really something I should be engaging with you about right now? Because right now, it doesn't feel like you're very real. So you have some questions about his realness, or even some questions about his character. Like, God, do you really love me, or are you gaslighting me? Like, are you my Valentine's Day gift, or should I look elsewhere? Like, do you love me? Or maybe about his ability, which has this idea of his power. Like, God, do you really have the power I've heard people say you have that can get us out of some messy situations? Or is all of that fictitious, imaginative creations in our minds? Do you have the power? See, all of us will go and get to this intersection of life with God where we levy some very hard questions at him and we want answers. And there's nothing per se wrong with that. I just want y'all to know that we all will get there. It's bound to happen, but we have this way of even throwing more to God. We start to calculate all that we've done for church and charity, for cause and Christ, and then we add our faithfully unfaithful commitments, you know, the stuff we start off saying we're going to do, and about 20% in, we say, nah, I'm good now. I've gotten a little bit momentum, and then we lob that to God and say, this is extra credit. I should get a better grade in life. And now I'm dealing with this, I'm dealing with that, I'm dealing with situations that I never anticipated dealing with. And how do I go about asking the right questions? See, questions can be perceived as being bad. Depending on how you are brought up, you know, questions can come off as being disrespectful even. See, I was brought up old school, and trust me, everyone wasn't brought up that way. I wasn't allowed to ask questions. It was like, what are we eating for food? What are we eating for dinner, Mom? Shut up, boy. This ain't no question and answer session. You ate what was ever in front of you. Where are we going, Dad? Oh, did you buy the car? Did you pay the insurance? Can you drive to point B? No. So we were not allowed to ask questions. And if you use your parental context and how you were brought up and you try to apply that to how God engages us, you're bound to spiritually implode. The truth of the matter is God can handle your questions. He can handle your questions. As a matter of fact, many of our ancient biblical heroes, the people that we really get amped up by when we hear their stories, actually had this phraseology that many of them use, and it began with the words, how long? In Psalms 13, the psalmist literally pulls out his banjo and begins to create music. My kind of guy. He says, how long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? Anybody ever felt like that? How long will you hide your face from me? I mean, he pulls his song, his harp out, and he just goes, how long will you forget me? And I can't quite find the melody. I can't quite find the rhythm, but if it were me, I'd put it in a rap song. Long, right? I would have made, y'all are really, really not getting with me right there. Or let's say country, hip hop. It go a little bit like, well, never mind. How long will you forget me forever? Will you hide your face from me? Will you let me suffer in this stew? How long? Habakkuk asked, how long? Isaiah asked, how long? Jonah like, hey, tired of saying all these sardines, been in the fish's belly for 2 days. What up? How long? Listen, Jonah said that, and also Sarah got so used to watching Wheel of Fortune, and she started talking to God like, these eggs ain't getting no more young. How long? Talk to me. Are you the real deal or nah? Are you the one? Should I look elsewhere? Peter asked, how long? See, questions about God to God aren't erosive or insubordinate. I've learned that when I've had mad questions, anybody ever had some mad questions? Yeah. Mad questions. I've learned that when I've had some mad questions, it was really about me turning to God versus turning away from God. It was about me facing God versus saying, I'm gonna lob the question to you, then I'm gonna walk away. That's what Pontius Pilate did when he was interrogating Jesus about if he was the true son of God and the king of the Jews. And then he gets to this point where he says, what is truth? He was standing in front of truth and he never stayed for truth to answer. He walked out the room. Many of us don't give God enough time to answer. We ask the question and we walk away. We turn our back. And I would encourage you to ask the question with your face towards God. And if you stay around long enough, you will see the mystery of the messiness unveiled. I want to introduce you to a word and then to a biblical character. It was a word that I was listening to Greg speak a few weeks ago, and it just jumped off the pages for me as I heard it. It stood on edge for me. It was the word comeback. How many are saying, I'm signing up for a comeback? I just see y'all are not being loud enough for me. How many are signing up for a comeback? And you know what a comeback means? It means getting back to a place, recovering something that was lost. Some of y'all have lost your mojo. You've lost your confidence. You've lost a little bit of your faith. You've lost your certainty. Stuff has eroded around you, and you're in the place where you have no other option but for a comeback. If you are there and if you are here, I want to say to you, you're in the right house. But the next thing I want to share with you is the comeback begins with questions. Asking questions is the beginning of the journey. It's the beginning of the recovery. Now I want to introduce you to a character found in the Old Testament, a guy by the name of Gideon. He's found in the book of Judges. He gives us this beautiful engagement with God. But he's found there in the book of Judges. And in the book of Judges, he's a major deal. Gideon is a major deal in a major mess. The book of Judges tells a story of Israel's deliverers. The word judges is actually referred to as deliverers, not an official judge, not a legal judge, but one whom God used to deliver Israel from what they got caught up in. And they rescued them time after time. And this particular part of Judges is parked around this interesting scenario where it's the close of Joshua's conquest and life of the great, wonderful migration across the Jordan River. And now there's this tail end of the narrative of God's redemptive story and keeper of promises. It says something that bewilders me. It says there grew up a generation that knew not the Lord, nor the acts of God. Now, I don't know if that disturbs you, but when I read that, it tears at my heart. I'm saying, how can someone see the hand of God do all of this amazing stuff and never tell their children about it? I wonder sometimes if the parents quit taking the children to Sunday school. I came up in Sunday school. I didn't like it, but I was on the side pew with my mama and my daddy, and we didn't have children's day, children's church and children's options. It was sit there, listen, and digest. And so it was one of those mandatory, and you better not ask any questions. See, you get what I'm talking about, man. You're like, that was my torture too. Welcome to Torment 101. By the time we get to this, we find that the people of Israel are on their fifth judge. You see, they had an appetite for anarchy and lawlessness. And if you read Judges as a whole too fast, you will get seasick with seesaw-itis. Seasick is something that an urban boy doesn't necessarily get to experience. But I decided a few years ago to take my son to go whale watching in San Francisco because I tend to be a very skilled connoisseur of nature. So I tell him about it, and he is kind of melancholy about it. He's like, okay, sure. He's game. He's like the adventurer. And I'm like, sure, we're going to conquer the sea. And we get on this boat, and I didn't follow all of the instructions that I read on the website because I figured, you know, my son was, he was gangbuster about it, and I was gangbuster about it. We're just going to have a good time and see some whales. I brought my camera, and we're ready to rock and roll, but I forgot, you know, the medicine that you're supposed to take. And so we hitting these waves, and it's really choppy in the bay. It's really, really choppy. And we're just going up and down, and my son gets sick. I said, what's wrong? He said, I am feeling good, Dad. I said, boy, pucker up. Man up. And so I'm rubbing his head. I'm massaging his back. I'm like, oh, man, we kind of stepped into one now. And I'm trying to say, son, we're about to see whales to inspire him to wholeness and healing. He's all of a sudden, we hit one of these good old waves, and I just go. It doesn't even give you a warning. It just hits you. All of a sudden, you're sick. It's because of all of the up and down tendencies and motions of the boat and the water. And that is the same as the nature of the relationship Israel had with God. When the getting was good, God was great. And when they got what they wanted, they abandoned God. And it is a saga of God's faithfulness and our sinfulness. It is akin to the child who promises their parent they're not going to touch the hot stove, and as soon as the parent turns their back, goes in the other room, suddenly you hear a scream because the child touched the hot stove. Welcome to Israel. Welcome to this seesaw-itis. And in chapter 2, it gives us an outlay of context. In verse 10, it says, after that generation died, another generation grew up who did not acknowledge the Lord or remember the mighty things he had done for Israel. Verse 12, they abandoned the Lord. Very rich graphical language. The God of their ancestors who had brought them out of Egypt, they went after other gods, worshiping the gods of the people around them. They were like, Yahweh, I find other gods and stuff more entertaining than you. Verse 16, then the Lord raised up judges to rescue the Israelites from their attackers. And you got to go back and read Judges 2 because it reveals God's heart and man's habit and God's devotion to our comeback. So let me park the preaching in chapter 6 where we pull to the forefront, the man by the name of Gideon. Here's the text in verses 1 through 7 of chapter 6. Now, I will tell you all, before I get too far into it, I tend to sermonize everything. I can watch a movie and create a sermon. I can be driving on the highway and create a sermon. Listen, I can be playing tic-tac-toe and create a sermon. I can literally be playing Fortnite with my son, getting slaughtered by all of his friends, and still get a sermon. I'm telling you, so I'm going to sermonize some of this to let you see the burden of what Gideon is thrust into. In verse 1, it says, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord. And for 7 years, he gave them into the hands of the Midianites. If I was to preach this as a solo sermon, just verse 1, I would call it again. They did evil in the eyes of the Lord again. Verse number 2 says, because the power of Midian was so oppressive, the Israelites prepared shelters for themselves in mountain clefts, caves, and strongholds. I would title this, The Runaways in Wrong Places. Verse 3, whenever the Israelites planted their crops, the Midianites, the Amalekites, and other eastern peoples invaded the country. I would title this, The Enemy Knows Your Schedule. Verse 4, they camped out on the land and ruined the crops all the way to Gaza and did not spare a living thing for Israel, neither sheep, nor cattle, nor donkeys. I would title this, Never Saw This Coming. Verse 5, they came up with their livestock and their tents like swarms of locusts. It was impossible to count them on their camels. They invaded the land to ravage it. I would title this, Now Do You Believe? And the last verse, in verse number 6, Midian so impoverished the Israelites that they cried out to the Lord for help. I would title this, The Comeback. I just gave you 5 weeks of sermons. I'm out. Y'all can go home now. The Comeback. I want to title and reiterate the title, Comeback Questions. Verse 1, you may have read that with me, and something might have really made you wrestle with the text. Notice it says, God gave them into the hands of the Midianites. That sounds abrasive. It sounds unfatherly. It sounds unloving. But I need y'all to hear me when I use the word success. I'm talking about fulfilling the will of God. When God sets you up, he also designs your setup in such a way that he's the only one that can keep you up. Let me say that again. When God grants you success, he designs it in such a way that in order to keep the success, he's the only one that can sustain you in the success. In other words, if you get something from God and you know it's the hand of God and you abandon the will of God, the law of God, the desire of God, did y'all see my Mr. Miyagi wax on, wax off there? Here's what he's got to say. Listen, you got to be mindful that he is the sustainer. He cannot be replaced. He cannot be pushed to the side after you reach the crescendo of what you've been asking God for. See, when a person gets blessed by God and then they abandon God's law, God's will, God's desire, they do not know and are not aware of the forces that surround their borders. Success, and I use that subjectively and not in the American way, with God also demands abiding with God. In other words, we have to stay with God. We have to stick with God. Israel was like, I'm blessed and I don't need you anymore, God. I got the house now, don't need you anymore. My child is in the school that we have prayed for years, don't need you anymore. I got the car, got this, got that, got the promotion. Yahweh, we good. Go over to the side now. Let me tell you something. That is a formula for disaster. Verses 1 through 6, what we just read, proves one main point, that God will not allow his children to sin successfully. Like God ain't just going to let you ball out. He's going to chasten us, not punish us. Punish means I'm trying to inflict injury upon you. In some cases, irreparable injury upon you. But chasten is this idea of God using restorative acts to get you back to the sweet spot of walking with him. So he lets some stuff dry up. He lets some things shut down. He lets some doors close, not to punish you, but to awaken you to who he is and who you are to him. He chastens us. And let me tell you all something, that ultimately what was Israel's problem was worship. It really came down to their worship life. See, God is very serious about him being a priority in your life. Verse 10 says, I said to you, I am the Lord your God. Do not worship the gods of the Amorites in whose land you live. But you have not listened to me. If I could just use and rephrase the Beatitudes. Let me not say rephrase. Let me add to the Beatitudes in this day and time. I would add my own scripture, which I know I'm not supposed to. But I got creative license. And it would be this. Blessed are the undistracted. For theirs is the kingdom of God. In this crazy season that no one saw coming. Can I tell you all, can I even use the word that you're tired of hearing? Pandemic. pandemic. That we have had to make adjustments. We've had to do some stuff out of the box. That was no manual that said, just break the glass, pull the manual out, and do A, B, C, and D. No one had the blueprint for this. And in this time, your worship to God has to be more real than just physical gathering. And I'm not knocking that. Trust me, it is not a time for us to let the distractions around us pull us away from God. But can I implore you to lean into God? Let the worship be as real in your living room, on your deck, in your car, in your garage, in your basement, here, there, wherever you are, whatever campus you're at. Let your worship be just as real there as it is here, because it is in that moment that you find strength from God, that in his presence, there is fullness of joy. Disciples of God, when you lack purpose, you also drop out of this journey with God. And God is saying, lean in. I'm going to show you some stuff. It's uncomfortable. It's not normal. It's abnormal. It's not going away anytime soon, right? We all had our predictions up. We all had our expectations up. And God is saying, will you worship me? Will you worship me when it's good? And will you worship me when it's not so good? Oh my God. Will you bless the Lord at all? Oh my God. In other words, you need to make your fireplace where your TV sits over, it needs to become a place of worship. Will you be able to even now walk across your living room and say, God, I still bless you? Will you be able to, in your bedroom, without having brushed your teeth or had coffee yet, thank God for that, and will you still be able, with the phone in front of you, bless God and say, I feel like preaching this morning, I still will worship you. When you're driving on the highway, keep your hands on the steering wheel, but could you just say with your mouth, God, I still will worship you. See, the power of that is that our connection with God gets real when adversity comes on our shoreline. So let me introduce you to the man Gideon real quickly. In verse 11 and 12, we see the context. We see the pericope, what he is dealing with. But then here is what God begins to do. In verse 11, the angel of the Lord came and sat down. The angel of the Lord is used 59 times in the Old Testament. 22 times it is used in the book of Judges. It is God saying something about his presence. We'll talk about that later. It says, angel of the Lord came down, sat under the oak of Ophrah that belonged to Joash the Abiezrite, where his son Gideon was threshing wheat in a wine press to keep it from the Midianites. Verse 12, when the angel of the Lord appeared to Gideon, he said, the Lord is with you, mighty warrior. Gideon's actual name means mighty warrior. When God comes to Gideon, he is not a mighty warrior, he's a coward. The Bible is clear that he is threshing wheat in a wine press. Now, I don't know about y'all, but as he's threshing wheat in a wine press, that is not the place I want to get my wheat from. I don't want to get wheat from where they produce wine. And if you know anything about wine presses of that day, they literally would stand in this pit and crush grapes. The oppression of the Midianites and the Amalekites is so grievous that Gideon is simply just trying to survive. He is not a mighty man or warrior. He is scared for his family, for his life. And when the angel of the Lord appears to him, something crazy happens. Gideon says, I've been waiting on you, buddy. Which leads me to three questions that Gideon levies toward God. I wanted to jump right into it. Question number one that he levies toward God, and we have done this as well. Does God care about me? By a show of hands, have you ever asked that? Okay, five of y'all telling the truth, the rest of y'all praying for you. Does God care? If we could use the words in the KJV version of what the disciples said to Jesus when the storm came and they were on the boat, carest thou not that we perish? We've all asked that question. Check what he does, though. The angel says, mighty man, mighty warrior. Look what Gideon says. Pardon me? My Lord, Gideon replied, pause, I need to put some Afrocentricity into this, pardon me. Because the way our language and vernacular is just a little bit different. See, I think Gideon was being a true brother right here. I don't think he was being very kingly or he wasn't being very refined. He was being very wounded. And see, in the black community, when we say, excuse me, it's not asking you to excuse nothing. We're trying to get you to repeat what you just said so we can have hands with you. Sometimes you hear it in the form of come again. We're not asking you to say it. Don't say it again. You are about to get hit. Look what Gideon says. He says, mighty man, mighty warrior. He says, what? Excuse me? What? He said, now check it out. If the Lord is with us, why has all this happened to us? Why has all this happened to us? Where are all his wonders that our ancestors told us about when they said, did not the Lord bring us up out of Egypt? But now the Lord has abandoned us and given us over into the hand of Midian. I mean, he had a whole historical rant. Tell me about Egypt. Don't see much of Egypt here. No parting of the Red Sea. No daily bread falling from heaven. He had an entire rant around the question, do you care about me? God's answer was as such. See, God doesn't answer him as he wants and like we want to be answered. He speaks to Gideon's purpose and doesn't respond to his interrogation. Not word for word like we want to engage God. See, I call it first layer versus core concern. First layer versus core concern. For example, my son, first layer, will say, Dad, I'm hungry. And sometimes followed by, what's for dinner? I know what he's getting at. So I jump to what his core concern is, fish or chicken. We don't like the fact that God jumps over our first layer. God, I'm hurting. God jumps to our core concern. I'll be with you. You're like, hold on. Whoa. Talk about my hurt. God says, I got you. He jumps to the real concern that answers our question. See, God's answers to our dilemma is wrapped in our becoming who he made us to be. Some of us are stalling for answers, and God is waiting for obedience. Some of us have God in court. Verse 14 says it this way. The Lord turned to him and says, go in strength. That was his God's answer. Notice what he just levied at God. Where have you been? I don't see nothing that my forefathers told me about you. God says, go in the strength you have and save Israel out of Midian's hand. Am I not sending you? Some of us have God as a defendant in the court, and there's nothing wrong with asking him questions. Just remember, he's the judge. To hear God in difficult times, ask him not why, but ask him, what do you want me to do about it? See, the moment you ask God, what do you want me to do about it? Something happens that is intrinsic and spiritual and real. Our purpose is activated. Some new energy comes into your life. Is there a hole there a little bit? Yeah, because you are healing, I-N-G, process. But your purpose is activated. You have a higher calling, a higher agenda, and an assignment that is greater than you ever could have imagined. So that's you adding yourself to God's toolbox. That's you saying to God, use me to be an answer to this dilemma. So does God care? God says, yep, I care so much about Israel, I'm calling you. The second question that Gideon levies towards God, does God know what he's doing? Does God know what he's doing? Because he's asking this in light of God choosing him. He's like, hold on, you want me to do what? He's like, you could have said anybody else, but you said me? Now he's questioning, do you really know what you're doing? Do you really have an idea who you just told to go and fight? See, God's people choices are never going to be our choices. Because God comes for people that we would never expect he would use. They're not the people who we would say, yep, that's a good candidate for that. God uses the underdogs. And let's get real. Let's get real. If God comes to us with a particular task that's real big, we also would disqualify ourselves. We would say, no, not me. Mm-mm. See, God rarely approaches pre-qualified people for divine work. Mm-mm. You come to God empty and ready, he'll fill you up. But you come to God full, he'll empty you out. See, God wants ready people. In verse 15, notice what he says. Pardon me, Lord. Again, he says, how can I save Israel? Now, he levies this loaded one sentence. It's a three-layer cake of self-sabotage. He says, my clan is the weakest, the Abiezerites in Manasseh. Manasseh historically was considered a smaller tribe. When it first began, it had smaller numbers, but it grew and population fluctuated over time, but it started off as a smaller tribe. And then he says, I am the least in my family. So now let's check this out. He says, in my clan is weak, the Abiezerites, they're weaklings. They're the guys you don't want to do nothing with. Then you are calling the tribe of Manasseh, and we've been low in numbers. And then you're calling me, I'm the lowest dude on the totem pole. Can I tell you all something? Most of us disqualify ourselves before we ever engage the supernatural power of God to do what he's called us to do. And we call that self-sabotage. Let me tell you something. Constant negative self-assessments lead to low self-esteem, which ultimately leads to self-sabotage. When you are constantly beating yourself down about how you're not worthy and you can't and you don't have and you don't know and you don't, it leads to low self-esteem, and your view of life will ultimately have you sabotaging everything that God wants to do in your life. It's like wash, rinse, and repeat. Brené Brown has this exercise in some of her boot camps, and it's one sentence she writes on the board, and it is, write yourself a permission slip. A permission slip to act, to feel, to be. Essentially, she says to her group, you have permission to be excited. You have permission to pray big prayers. You have permission to be uncomfortable. You have permission to grieve. You have permission to not know what tomorrow holds. You have permission not to have it all together. Some of you all need to go home and write yourself a permission slip. It will release you from all of these negative self-assessments, because you're not the only one. Moses says, I can't talk. Jeremiah said, I can't talk. Paul said, I'm the least of the apostles. Listen, my brothers and sisters, if you will open yourself up to anything God wants to do in your life, if you will open yourself up to being used by God in any way possible, or slightly even, you are going to feel inadequate. In fact, some of you all will have a tight response on God's desk of how he shouldn't choose you before the day is out. That's just how we are, because it's scary being courageous. It's insane walking by faith. It's unsettling to say, God, I trust you. It's irrational to believe at times, but you're not the only ones to feel inadequate. Gideon is asking questions. Here's God's answer about, do you know what you're doing? Here's what God says in verse 16. The Lord answered, I will be with you. Can I tell y'all something? As a person who's been scarred enough times as a leader, can I tell y'all something? When that doesn't seem like it's enough, can I give you all a peek into the future of your walk with God? It is enough. It is more than enough. Can you just, for a moment, whisper this to yourself? God be with me. God be with me. I don't know what Monday holds, but God be with me. I don't know what this process is going to do. I don't know what this doctor's appointment is going to reveal. I don't know what I'm going to face, but God be with me. A.W. Tozer says, all God's acts are done in perfect wisdom, even when he chose you to do this, to engage that. Let me tell y'all something. You're not the only ones to feel inadequate and not the only ones to ask the question, do you know what you're doing? For some of you who follow us and know what we're dealing with as a church, we have, for the first time in 8 years, settled upon a building expansion that will allow us to have a permanent home. We've been tabernacling for 8 years, set up, breakdown. And let me tell y'all something about this project. It is, as we always want the finish line to be there, I'm gonna tell you all truth. And I can't preach to you, Crossing, if I can't be honest with you, because I don't want you all to ever think this stage means supermen and superwomen stand on it. But I feel ill-equipped every day, and every day I have to fight deficiency that's at my bedside, not at my door. Literally putting one foot out the bed, I feel so inadequate. One, will we get to the finish line? So much is riding on this. And I'm going to tell you something. As God said, I will be with you, God sometimes answers being with us by sending people into our lives. So I've been able to communicate to Greg and to Randall and to the team, because when you have a circle, you can be safe and you can say, ah. And I'm going to ask Greg to come to the stage, because I'm saying to myself sometimes, like, I don't get this. Does God know what he's doing? So can we just talk about that? Does God, because we've had that talk about from Africa, from St. Louis to Africa, yeah, about the plan of God, and how do we play a part in that?
Yeah, so we are partners. And I want you all to know, you know this, and I, by the way, this is going to be real short on my part, because I don't know if you realize this or not, but you're preaching and I don't want to get in the way of this. But I learn from you as much as you learn from me. I can't even tell this next part of the story without saying that. And when you were saying earlier about that this is an intergenerational thing, we're building a legacy through generations. I remember putting my arm around you, and I've told some of you this story. I remember putting my arm around you in Rwanda after a pretty heavy session with Hutus and Tutsis and deep, horrible divides and hurts and people praying in French and Wanda and English saying, God, please, please heal our land. And I remember you and I standing on that stage and putting my arm around you and saying, you know, there's gonna come a day where I'm not here. And it's gonna be you. You are the next generation with some of our young pastors. It's gonna be you across Africa and in the St. Louis area. So for us, this is just a partnership, man. This is a long play. That's what we're doing.
Yeah.
So, I know what it's like to go in a building fund. I know what it's like to deal with budgets and deadlines and contractors and local government authorities telling you, you got to do this.
I'm depressed already. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, I get all of that. And then this pandemic you were talking about.
Yeah.
You all know this. I just want to say this out loud, and I'm going to give it right back to you. At the end of throughout our big picture campaign, we said part of what we were going to do was to put aside money in a bucket, and it was a seven-figure amount that we were going to put in a bucket and say, how do we bless and encourage other ministries that we want to partner with that are making a difference in the world and certainly in the St. Louis community? So it was real easy. It was a very short conversation when our leadership said a couple of weeks ago, hey, we want to bless David and their ministry as they're going through some stuff. So you need to know, through your generosity, we wired $100,000 into your building campaign. And listen, I had to preface all of that by saying, you're right, God speaks to us by being in relationship with each other. But David, money is just money.
Yeah.
It's a thing, but money is just money.
Yeah.
The way I can face what I'm facing in this world is knowing that I get to lock arms with you, is knowing that I'm not doing this alone, is knowing that I can learn from you. Yeah. And so that's how this incarnational thing goes. Yeah. I think I'm going to get out of the way because you need to keep preaching and I want to keep learning. So
thank
is that
you
good?
So much. That's wonderful.
All right. Okay.
Can I say thank you to you, to the team, to the Crossing? Come on, y'all. I say that because it's not just a thank you because of only gratitude for what gets us closer to our finish line. And if y'all ever had a project bigger than you can imagine, this is the largest undertaking our church has ever, ever embarked upon. And it is daunting. But you're ministering to my soul. Like not just okay, the project is done. We can check that. No, 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 no. You're ministering to my calling, to an area that most people are running from, to a city that most people have given up on. It's not you all just saying, yeah, we're just going to be a blessing. No, it's you all saying we're going to be the church and we're going to stand in front of all that is wrong with the world and say we will be the vessel of hope and joy and fruitfulness and change. That is what that's about. It's ministering to kids you'll never see. It's ministering to a generation that you'll never see run around the park and have hope. And so when God tells Gideon, I will be with you, he sends him people. That is why we must, as the church, more now than ever, not levy every critic or criticism, but say, how can I be a part of what God wants to do? How can I be used by God to show up as the vessel who has an answer? How can I be that person? See, I just want to share with you question number three, and I'm out your way. I'll have to come back tomorrow, and we'll preach here tomorrow. Question number three that Gideon levies toward God, he says, does God keep his promises? Sometimes when you are about to embark upon something big, you all know that the evil one, the adversary, and just plain old people, they're not necessarily evil. They just come and there's a distraction. You get a notification, you get an email, you get a text message that can just rock your world. Anybody ever been there? You are on the brink of something and boom. Just last night as I was leaving the stage, I got a text message from my sister in love, said my mom just died. And I'm gonna tell you all something. In moments like that, we trust in the hands of a God who knows more than us, who cares far greater than we could ever care. And that is when we yield our uncertainty to a God who has proven historically, like in the craziest moments when you probably didn't have all the faith you have now. I won't get too close. I saw your social distancing barometer go off. And that was this God there saying, I keep my promises. That's what Gideon asked. He says, Will you deliver Israel from the Midianites? And here's what happened. I'm going to just get right to it. Here's what happens. He makes a clarion call. You got to read chapter 6 and 7 for yourself at the end of chapter 6 and at the beginning of chapter 7, because I'm not giving you all of it. I'm not going to put a nice little bow tie on it so you can go home and say, I got the whole story. No, 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 no. You're going to have to read. It gets messy. Gideon makes a clarion call. He says, hey, who want to go fight the Amalekites with me from my clan? The Abiezrites, 32,000 says, I'll go. He's like, whoa, hoo-hoo. Just when you get momentum, he gets an email, he gets a DM in his Instagram account. And it says, the Midianites, the Amalekites, and all the eastern countries got together, became one army, 132,000. Now Gideon got a 32,000. He was happy. And then he hears the news. 132,000? He's like, crap. So that's when he asked the question, you gonna do this or what? God says, I'll be with you. I love to give you a rosy picture of the journey with God, but sometimes, man, you just got to know when it don't make sense, I'll be with you. When you don't know if you are enough, sometimes all you can hold on to is God saying, I'll be with you. Reminds me of this prophet who had a servant. The prophet was Elisha. in Hebrew, his name is actually pronounced Elisha. He is the understudy of Elijah, but now Elijah is gone. And foreign enemies come and surround Elisha for reasons I won't get into, but he was prophesying things. And they said, we get to kill the prophet because he keeps telling the king our plans. So they surround his camp. His servant comes out the tent and he says, it's almost as though he's singing under his breath, but he's singing in such a way that it gives the impression Elisha is right next to him. He says, ah, my Lord, it's been good, but we're about to die. Elisha prays a prayer right there and says, God, open his eyes that he may see. He prays that over his servant. His servant opens his eyes and he sees all these chariots of God that's surrounded around the enemies in the physical. And then Elisha says these words, they that be with us are more than they that be with them. You need to know that even though you cannot see God, and sometimes you cannot feel God, you need to know that in the supernatural, God is working things out. I feel like running up and down these aisles. That God is making a way out of no way. That God is opening up doors that will blow your mind. I know. I want you to tell your neighbor something, but tell yourself, I believe God. Come on. I believe God. It's dark. It's lonely. It's uncertain. I believe him. Pandemic and all, I believe him. Crazy scenario in the world, I believe that God will prevail. Loss of a loved one, I believe God. In all of the messiness, I believe God. Is that your testimony today? Can you take that home with you today? Can you walk out of here knowing, as we get ready to hear the band, can you walk out of here knowing that even when it looks crazy, I believe God. Steve, I believe God. Painful, but I believe that God is somehow mending it here. I just believe that somehow in everything we have dealt with that don't make no kind of sense, I believe God. I just believe that God is up to something that's going to blow our minds. Just keep asking questions. Keep saying, God, will you? Don't fall away. Lean in and say, like an eager understudy. Just lean in. Are you? I'm here. I ain't going nowhere, God. I'm just gonna ask questions until you send answers. I hate to use this word, but I'm betting a farm on the kingdom. I trust you, God. What you gonna do now? That's where I am right now. Lord, I don't know how, I don't know where, I don't know when, but hey, I've done more stupid stuff in my own power. This is all you. I believe you. I ain't going nowhere. It's on you. Your name is at stake, not mine. You get what I'm saying? We have to come away with this with one reality. God cares. God knows what he is doing. God keeps his promises. He keeps his promises. He does. Let's just worship the Lord.